things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Who's going first?
That's a fantastic question. I do not know the answer to it.
Okay.
Do you want to rock, paper, scissors for it?
Sure.
All right. Winner goes first, right?
Yep.
Right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. All right. Jenny won with a good old paper.
Hit him with the papes. The classic.
The papes.
The papes. The heckin' papes. I told you the other day, I was like, ew, babe, I'm just like feeling soup nosh. He got so mad at me. He was like, just say it. Just say super nauseous. Well, I don't know why you're making up words. It doesn't even mean anything. And I was like,
you understood what I meant.
That's what I said. I said, you know exactly what I meant.
Uh-huh.
Are you yelling at me when my tummy hurts?
I said something. I said sus the other day to Sarah. And she's like, what is that? And I was like, sus, like suspicious. And she was like, oh, okay. Okay. All right.
She just thinks that. Hold on. I can't. Oh, I found it. I got really nervous because I couldn't find my
story.
Yeah.
That would have been bad news bears.
No. So because like the real life timeline doesn't always line up with like the podcast timeline, I don't really remember what I'm doing.
I had to do a quick breeze through.
Okay, good. Glad.
Of this last minute.
Because
this was written a solid 3.5 weeks ago.
Oh, yes. It's been a minute since we had these. We've had these in the pocket for
a hot minute.
A hot minute.
Yeah.
I got lucky because I ran across this just like in my perusings on the internet.
All right.
And when I started going into my research, I found an article by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Oh, cool.
I know. So if the Southern Poverty Law Center has already like done their research and article, I will never outdo it. So this is Southern Poverty Laws. They are my singular source.
Okay.
It's an article, Southern Poverty Law Center, Into Darkness, 2018. Summer issue of their publication, Intelligence Report, Confronting Hate, written by Brendan Joel Kelly on August 5th, 2018.
Okay.
So if anybody else needs reminded, the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing the Lord's work
mm-hmm.
in identifying, surveilling, researching, and exposing hate groups in America. And a lot of the time, hate groups and cults coincide. So I've had this cult in my notes app for a long time. I saw that they already have this group listed as a hate group. And when the article is written so well that I cannot outdo it, so I just have to share it. And I think that it's important to share awareness on behalf of some people that I love very dearly, and I'm just never going to be able to outdo it. So here is this. I have not edited the article one bit.
Okay.
Except they have a moment of, in a quote, some racial slurs that obviously I will not
be repeating.
So that is the only editing that I have done.
Appreciate that.
So, the 12 tribes, have you heard?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You have? Okay.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
It's not what I thought it was.
Okay.
It's not what I thought it was. Is a Christian fundamentalist cult born in the American South in the late 1970s.
Oh, the worst.
I know.
The worst. Okay.
You got all the bad parts mixed up into one little hate group.
The yuck is big.
It is little known to much of the country, and on first impression, its communes and hippie vibe restaurants and cafes can seem quaint, but beneath the surface lies a tangle of doctrine that teaches its followers that slavery was a marvelous opportunity for Black people who are deemed by the Bible to be servants to white people, and that homosexuals deserve no less than death.
Oh, I hate them.
It's awful.
I hate them with passion.
Yeah, as you should. It's going to get worse.
Well, it always does.
Yeah, it always does. While homosexuals are shunned by the 12 tribes, though ex-members say the group brags about unnamed members who are formerly gay, the group actively proselytizes to African-Americans, yet one of its Black leaders glorifies the early Ku Klux Klan.
What?
Yeah. The 12 tribes tries to keep its extremist teachings on race from novice members and outsiders, but former members and experts on fringe religious movements who've helped its followers escape paint a dark picture of life in the group's monastic communities, especially for African-American members, who must reconcile the appalling teachings of race with their own heritage and skin color. Sinasta Colucci was born in Detroit in 1984 to a white, free-spirited hippie woman and a dreadlocked black man of Cherokee ancestry. Colucci's parents split when he was an infant, and he was raised by his mom, who moved him and his older sister to Northern California when he was 3 months old. As a mixed-race kid growing up in the conservative town of Redding, California, where barely more than 1% of the population is black, Colucci was both aware of and confused by his skin color. He remembers an incident where he tried scraping his arms with tree bark to make his skin whiter.
Oh, honey.
His mom responded, telling him he should be proud of his Native American heritage. So sad. When Colucci was 10, he was at a park with his friends and witnessed two drunk men fighting, one white and one Native American. When police arrived, he remembers that the Native American man was handcuffed, beaten, and pepper sprayed while the white man walked away. He admits he didn't know the context of what he saw. I could have gotten the facts wrong, he says, but the incident made a lasting impact. From that time on, I had been deathly afraid of being beaten or killed because of how I look, Colucci writes in a memoir he self-published in early 2018. Mm. In Redding, Colucci was called an amalgamation of racial slurs by people who weren't sure of his ethnicity. But when he moved to Detroit for a brief stint in college after graduating high school in Redding, he was working at a church's chicken. He was called White Boy by some black customers. I was too white for Detroit and I was too black for Redding, California, he said. A few years later, at age 21, Colucci first encountered the community of the 12 tribes at their farm in Woublou, Missouri. It's W-E-A-U-B-L-E-A-U. Woublou. I don't fucking know.
Oh, a hullabaloo.
A hullabaloo in Missouri. Where he had traveled hoping to find a simpler, idealistic communal lifestyle. He was heartened that the first person he met was an older black man working on the farm who called himself Joshua. It was relieving, Colucci recalls. They all lived together and they didn't seem separate in a racial way. Just a couple of years later, at another 12 tribes community in North Carolina, Colucci would find himself with the black leader on the fringe religious movement who goes by Yohanan Abraham, whose real name was John Stringer.
All right.
Yeah. Yohanan.
Okay.
Abraham extolled the virtues of Nathan Bedford Forrest, an early member of the original post-Civil War KKK, and tried to impress on Colucci the inerrant biblical subservience of the black race to white men, slavery being a prime example of that holy dictum. As he recounts in his memoir of his 7 years with the 12 tribes, better than a Turkish prison, what I learned from life in a religious cult, the cult's teachings about race were revealed slowly to converts as they're indoctrinated into a lifestyle of microscopic control dictated by its leaders. The 12 tribes grew out of an early 1970s youth Bible study group led by Albert Eugene Spriggs and his wife Marcia in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
My mom's from Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. It is now an international network of several dozen religious communes that consider Spriggs, who is known as Yonek, a modern-day apostle, and follow his teachings explicitly, lest they risk being ostracized by the cult and damned to an apocalyptic lake of fire.
Oh, God.
Big threats.
Yeah.
With that. Followers who belong to the community, as members refer to the 12 tribes, surrender their earthly possessions to the group and live communally, often working at the tribe's restaurants or tea shops called the Yellow Deli and the Mate Factor. Remember that. I circle back to that.
I feel like I've heard of the Yellow Delis before.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have.
All right.
or simply laboring on the communes or one of the other cult-owned businesses. The internet is highly restricted and secular music, books, and other worldly influences are verboten. Spriggs and other leaders of the 12 tribes kept the bulk of the cult's teachings private and largely succeeded until Bob and Judy Pardon encountered the group in the mid-1990s. Bob Pardon owns a Master of Divinity degree and a Master of Theology with a concentration on ethics, and with his wife Judy, founded the New England Institute of Religious Research. Together, they run Meadow Haven in Lakeville, Massachusetts, which Pardon says is the only long-term transitional facility in the world for former members of destructive cults and fringe religious movements.
Ooh, that's I want to go there.
That's a big job.
Yeah.
But I think that's exactly what people of the Christian faith after they get out of like fundamentalists need.
Yeah.
Because I not all of them want to jump directly into a secular world and like still are really tied to their faith.
Right.
And need
community.
Community and religious people who are not extremists.
Bash it.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Pardons first came across the 12 tribes when a former member contacted them about what she perceived as child abuse. A young child whipped with a long, thin rod-like, long, thin rod like those used to hold balloons, which left ugly marks and bruises. Though she had brought child abuse charges that were eventually dropped for lack of evidence, the Pardons were intrigued by the group, which Bob Pardon said he initially thought was being unfairly maligned. They had a pretty low profile, and we'd never heard of them before, he said. Because of their initial skepticism about whether 12 Tribes was a destructive group, the Pardons were granted access to many of the communities in the Northeast and conducted extensive research with leaders, members, and ex-members. They also studied their printed materials, the free papers members distributed in order to proselytize, and any teachings that they could get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
But even with access to Spriggs and other leaders, the official teachings weren't shared with the Pardons. They said that we wouldn't understand, Pardon said, and that we were not under the anointed, which meant underneath Spriggs. I have 2 theological degrees, and I have extensive training in biblical languages and Christian history, so I was always a bit dumbfounded by that. Eventually, though, the Pardons met ex-members who had been at the highest levels right underneath Spriggs, and they took all of the teachings and shared them with the Pardons. Once we got those teachings, we knew there was a very seedy underbelly to the group. We began to realize that this was a really heavy thought reform environment. There was a lot of behavior control over the members' lives. Indeed, as Colucci recounts in his book, the group exerted control over everything from when single men should masturbate, quote, usually about every other day or every few days, and you're supposed to try not to think about anything as you're doing it. It's to be a mechanical release.
What?
To how to wipe your own ass. There's literally a teaching about taking 3 to 4 squares of toilet paper, folding it to the size of 1 square, then wipe, fold, and repeat until you have... this is from the article. And repeat until you have this tiny poop-stained square that you flush.
I have many questions.
I know I have control problems. But, like, I'm not out here telling people how to wipe their own ass.
No.
Among the teachings, the Pardons discovered the rationale behind the extensive accusations of child abuse in the 12 tribes. It's part and parcel of the theology that the child has to obey authority, and if the child doesn't obey authority, the child needs to have physical discipline. It used to be that only parents did that, but earlier on, it began to shift over so that anybody that came into the group who thought your child was disrespectful could discipline them. And that would regularly happen.
Gross.
Also revealed were Spriggs' teachings on homosexuality, that they must be put to death, and the teaching reads that homosexuality is a capital offense.
Oh, okay.
Oh, indeed.
Would beg to differ.
You right. Everybody with half a brain
would love
beg to differ.
To beg to differ on most of this. But...
Colucci would encounter these teachings during his 12 years as a member of the 12 tribes, though he says he personally never witnessed child discipline that he considered abusive. But the teaching that would cause him the most confusion and internal struggle regarded the role of the black race, known as the Cham teaching. The Cham teaching, or the Curse of Ham as it's more commonly known, stems from Genesis 9:20-25. In the story, Noah's son Ham, or Cham in the 12 tribes Hebraic vernacular, sees Noah naked and drunk in his tent and tells his brother Shem and Japheth. The brothers respond by walking backwards so as not to gaze on Noah's nudity and covering him with a blanket. When Noah awakens and discovered what happened, he curses Ham's son Canaan for Ham's impertinence, damning him to be a servant of servants to his brother. Though the Bible does not describe ethnicity or race to any of the characters in this story, over history, Ham/Cham has been portrayed as black by many in the furtherance of white supremacy, hence black servitude to Shem, posited by white racists, has been publicly justified by prejudiced individuals and religious denominations over the past few centuries, which is fucking disgusting.
Absolutely horrible.
Hate group ideologies like Christian identity and those of the KKK have incorporated the curse of Ham, biblical misinterpretation, into their racist theology. Christian identity, sometimes asserting that Jews are actually the descendants of Ham and Canaan. And in the 19th century, Southern Christians in America used the belief to justify slavery. The 12 tribes teachings regarded Ham both excuse slavery and perpetrate its bigotry, going so far as to attack MLK.
Oh.
Quote, Martin Luther King was filled with every evil spirit there is to say, Cham doesn't have to serve Shem. All manner of evil filled that man, the teaching reads. It is horrible that someone would rise up to abolish slavery. What a marvelous opportunity that blacks could be brought over here to be slaves so that they could be found worthy of the nations. And if that didn't just make you gag in your own mouth. I know.
I'm beside myself.
I know. The 12 tribes insist these teachings are not racist.
Oh, how? Please explain.
They insist upon it. Yohanan Abraham, the black leader who praised the early KKK to Colucci, wrote an article on the group's website titled, Are the 12 Tribes Racist? Under his given name, John Stinger. Multiple requests by the intelligence report to interview Abraham Stinger and other 12 tribes leaders were denied or ignored.
Huh.
Addressing a New York Post article that quotes from the group's Cham teaching, submission to white people is the only provision by which black people will be saved, Stinger wrote that the quote is taken totally out of context and has no application within the 12 tribes, where black people are saved like anyone else by the blood of the Son of God. He concludes, the conclusion of that quote and teaching is that the New York Post took out of context says this, slavery is over for those who believe and come into Messiah, but it is not over for those outside Messiah. Like, trying to gaslight in the worst fucking way.
Ugh.
The telling detail Stinger Abraham dodges is that the 12 tribes believe that only those baptized into their cult have come into the Messiah, leaving every other black person outside of Messiah, where Stinger admits he believes slavery is not over. Carolyn Figueroa, I'm so sorry, I'm going to butcher this name. Figueroa, Carolyn, who spent a year with the 12 tribes, left in 2011, wasn't exposed to the cult's teachings about black people until she left the group. Juan, her father, enlisted Bob and Judy Pardon, as well as cult expert Stephen Hassan, to help extract her from the group, at which time former members of the 12 tribes explained to her controversial teachings she had yet to learn. Colucci was baptized into the 12 tribes after a mere 3 weeks of living at the Stepping Stone Farm, but didn't encounter the Cham teaching for nearly a year within the cult. It was a younger man, who was also mixed race, who introduced him to the Cham teaching, something to the effect that black people are cursed and their only hope of righteousness is to submit to the white man. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Colucci approached one of his community leaders and asked about what he heard. The leader reasserted the teaching in a more graceful way.
Oh, more graceful.
Was it?
Just a little bit more well-rounded.
How graceful can you be while you're being a racist piece of shit? How much grace can you have? I can't imagine it's a lot.
No.
I was offended at first, and looking back, I'm not even sure why I eventually accepted it. I was focused on the positive. I was listening to the teachings, and part of me really wanted everything else they said to be true.
Sure.
2 years after he first heard the teaching, Colucci was sent to the 12 Tribes community in Hiddenite, North Carolina, where many of the cult's leaders were living, including Yonek, the founder, and Yohanan, who penned the Are the 12 Tribes Racist article. Stringer picked Colucci up at the airport in Charlotte when he arrived, and at that time, I was fully inundated. I was brainwashed. It was like meeting a hero.
Oh!
I idolized him. Here's this strong, powerful black man who's going to bring in more black people because we need more diversity, and that is the way that I thought about it. But as he spoke to Stringer and heard him speak about how Nathan Bedford Forrest and the early KKK were righteous because they brought order to the out-of-control northern black people raping women in the South after the Civil War, another image from his pre-cult past came to mind. Quote, he was like the black-white supremacist from the David Chappelle show, Colucci says. I was kind of dumbfounded the whole time I was there because I really wanted the 12 Tribes theology to be true. But he left in 2012, getting on a bus with his future wife the day after President Obama's re-election. He didn't leave because of the cult's teachings about black people, but rather had become disillusioned with their theology. Former member David Pike, who was part of the 12 tribes from 97 to 2004, was offended by some of the cult's teachings as well. He says he did witness young children being beaten extensively with thin balloon sticks. Quote, I saw some kids getting switched till they bled.
Oh, horrible.
But he finally escaped and also spent time at Bob and Judy Pardon's Meadow Haven facility. Jenny Lynn Fiore, a member of the 12 tribes in the early 2000s, took issues with the cult's racism and authoritarian discipline of children and its treatment of women. Quote, I saw very controlling, overbearing husbands treating their wives pretty badly. There was no real recourse. They were basically kitchen slaves, she says.
Oh, my gosh.
But she spent years in and out of the group before finally cutting ties.
Good for her.
It's remarkable that people of conscience like Colucci, Figueroa, Pike, and Fiore become indoctrinated to the 12 tribes' abhorrent teachings on homosexuality, black people's subservience to white people, and extensive corporal punishment of small children. They really begin to control your internal reality, how you process things, and how you see reality, said Bob, who has helped many former members of the 12 tribes transition out of the cult over the last 20-some years.
Jesus.
There's a lot of emotion control. You feel guilty about things you shouldn't feel guilty about, not guilty about things when you should, and the same with fear. You fear things you shouldn't, and you don't fear things that you probably should. We were immigrants, Colucci writes in his memoir of his and his wife's bus ride away from the 12 tribes. We were leaving one nation, the nation of New Israel, the 12 tribes community, a nation in which women must be submissive to men, and blacks and whites are not equal. Homosexuality is a sin which gays must be repentant of if they want to be accepted, where even differing beliefs and opinions are not allowed. Your daily activities are strictly dictated, and we were entering what is arguably the freest nation on the planet. So, last little bit. Hang in there. Gosh. I'm almost done.
Okay.
You remember the two businesses I mentioned in the call earlier, the Met Cafe,
the Yellow Cafe.
And the, yes. So, the Met Cafe is located at 866 Manitou Avenue in Manitou Springs, Colorado. It has a 4.5-star rating and 167 reviews on Google. The Yellow Deli has its flagship in Chattanooga, Tennessee, with other locations in Vista, California, Valley Center, California, Juanita, New York, Oak Hill, New York, Rutland, Vermont, Boulder, Colorado, Pulaski, Tennessee, Hiddenite, North Carolina, Chilliwatch, British Columbia, Nelson, British Columbia, Katoomba, New South Wales, Australia,
Kingston,
Ontario, Kyoto, Japan, San Sebastian, Spain, Huntington, England, General Rodriguez, Argentina, Warsaw, Missouri, Coxsackie, New York, Arcadia, Florida, Brunswick, Georgia, and Plymouth, Massachusetts. They are closed on Sunday for the Sabbath. And from their website, in their Our History section, it reads, the early 70s would not have been such a special time in Chattanooga without the Yellow Deli. Remember those luscious fruit salads, great sandwiches, and homemade desserts? Something about its warm, rustic atmosphere drew people like a magnet. And who can forget the heartfelt invitation at the bottom of the hand-drawn Yellow Deli menu? We serve the fruit of the spirit. Why not ask? Somehow, God's love has been communicated to our hearts in such a way that we all wanted to do was pass on the love, joy, and peace spoken of in the New Testament. Our Savior meant everything to us, so working together to serve the best food and the best atmosphere with all of our hearts seemed a normal response. The fruit of the Spirit was produced naturally from the good tree of happy believers working together. That was the motive in the hearts of Gene and Marcia Spriggs when they opened the Yellow Deli on Brainerd Road in May of 1973. It's fucking gross. They're still operating so many businesses at such...
That's a massive scale.
That's a massive scale for such a absolutely disgusting doctrine to be built on.
Right. Oh, my God.
So, if you see a Yellow Deli, don't eat there. Don't go there.
Don't go there.
Don't go there.
Turn around.
Bye. Go find you a Panera.
Yeah.
And woof. That is the story of the 12 tribes.
Wow.
It is such... I can't even put it into words how disgusting that is. I'm sorry.
I mean, thank you for telling me.
You're welcome. It's just, I feel like if there's people like this running around in America like this, like, we should all be aware.
Yes, I agree. 100%. Okay.
Tell me about something better.
I have something slightly better.
Oh, okay. Good.
I do.
Oh, wow.
So it's, she's whack.
Okay.
Okay. But of all, in the grand scheme of Grimm.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit.
A little bit grim?
A little bit grim.
Okay.
You know?
Ah, she said it.
Yeah. I might. Okay. I'm going to give myself a disclaimer later. But anyway. Okay. So I'm going to tell you about the cult called The Friends Landing.
The Friends Landing?
Yeah. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay. So my source is really the Cult Institute website. Mm-hmm. I got most of my articles from there. Most of them are written by Rick Ross or people who are involved in this cult.
Okay.
Or their family members. So let me set the scene for you.
Great.
It's 1998, and a mother is talking with her adult son about an imaginative and educational experience he wants her to attend. She is a little hesitant because she has never done anything like it and she doesn't know what to expect. But her son is insistent that she would love the dream camp at Friends Landing. He described it as a spiritual event. She was flattered that her son, who she's always had a close relationship with, that he wanted her to experience this event and seemed to have made such a difference in him personally. She spent the $1,700 in order to attend, and while she expected a beautiful and enlightening week, she found that she was uneasy, skeptical, and confused. The camp wasn't anything like her son described. After she left the two-week dream camp, she spoke with her friends and family who believed that her son was a part of a cult, if not an extremely unhealthy group. Although she tried to get him to leave the group over the course of several years, he refused. This is one of the many stories of parents losing their children to Friends Landing. Friends Landing is what Rick Allen Ross from the Cult Education Institute, concierge of human political group. I'm sorry, concierge? What?
Concierge?
Yeah, that's just not the word that I think is supposed to go there.
Oh.
Friends Landing is what Rick Allen Ross from the Cult Education Institute calls a human potential group, which incorporate and combine facets of various belief systems such as New Age mysticism, Eastern religious traditions, UFO beliefs, the Bible, meditation, Native American beliefs, often coupled with human potential themes, therapy, and or self-help realization. They're often led or facilitated by a charismatic leader or some situation professional counselors who may make spiritual claims in addition to their official credentials, which I just think is super dangerous. Like, if you have a professional counselor that you didn't go to thinking like this person has like those same religious beliefs as I do. I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's sus.
Yeah. Sus.
It's sus.
It's sus.
Okay. So Friends Landing was founded in 1983 by a woman named White Wind Swan Fisher.
What? What?
Yeah. Her name is White Wind Swan Fisher.
Man, she just picked words and strung them together.
Really, really just going for it. Who was a licensed family and child counselor. It was originally located in Northern California, but was moved to a 60-acre site located near Springfield, Oregon. In addition to being a counselor, White Wind also claimed to be a shaman, teacher of consciousness. According to the group's published material, Friends Landing a Spherical Reality Certification Program, White Wind has worked and studied in family systems and reconstruction, Huna and Native American traditions, and with Deepak Chopra at the Sharp Institute Mind and Body Center. Mm. So a little bit about Ms. White Wind. She was actually born Susan Briggs Kilbourne on June 18th, 1954. She married a couple of times and had a few kids. During the 80s, she moved to Hawaii and spent time with Native people there and spiritual leaders. She claimed that they recognized her as a seer and a shaman.
Ooh.
In 1983, White Wind left her formal practice as a therapist due to the fact that her shaman teachings contradicted her professional education. It's probably for the best that she left the professional world of therapy, as she was the subject of a civil suit filed by Lynn Sheffield, a former patient. The suit says that she had intentionally and negligently inf-
inflicted emotional distress through her work.
Ooh.
Sheffield claims that claims damages for medical malpractice, sexual battery, fraud, and negligent misrepresentation.
Damn.
I know. These claims were denied. Unfortunately, it never went to trial because the cause was dismissed by Sheffield. Uh-huh. So I think that it was just settled outside of court.
Okay.
At any rate, she went on to found Friends Landing and started offering camps like the one mentioned earlier, along with other classes that would take place over the course of a few weeks. Each of these would cost between $1,500 and $5,000.
Jeez.
Yeah. One of the more expensive experiences was called the Spherical Reality Course. This became the foundation for Friends Landing, and it is described as a synergistic expansion of the knowledge of psychology and religion, and offers a relevant paradigm and way of seeing what a human being is all about. Friends Landing claims that the spherical reality is a new paradigm, unique lens that provides a way of viewing human beings. And these are quotes from the Friends Landing Spherical Reality Certification Program Handbook. So if it's a bunch of mumbo jumbo word salad, that's what it says.
Okay.
It is what it is. So I wanted to break down the four principles of the spherical reality for us.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Please do.
So number one is source dipping.
Okay.
Which is silence and meditative contemplation. Intuitive expression, which is articulating a life of authenticity.
Okay.
Number three is physical spontaneity, which is the interplay of all the senses.
What?
Ooh.
What?
Interplay. I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't go the course. I didn't pay $5,000 to go to the course. And the number four is witness, and that is the celebration and the stillness of wisdom.
Okay.
It's all just...
It means nothing.
New age nonsense.
Yeah, seriously.
So, and this is my favorite thing about cults. It's just a bunch of word salad. The Spherical Reality Course is a 10-month program. So this is not one that can be done in just a couple of weeks, like the day camp or the dream camp or whatever. Friends Landing was incorporated as a private, for-profit business. It is costly to be a member. Parents of members are highly concerned about the amount of money their children pay to live, work, and participate at Friends Landing. One man pays $450 a month for a trailer on the campground, Dream Camp, which is between $1,550 and $1,750 per year, and they're encouraged to take it yearly. The Spherical Reality program is $5,000, and there is something called the Standing Tall Circle, which I believe is like a small group within the group, and you have to pay $2,000 a year to be a part of that. And this is like what people want, they're like, you achieve to be a part of the Standing Tall group.
It's like a MLM.
It sounds like NXIVM a little bit.
Yes.
Where you just like keep just paying money.
To like Scientology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are allegations regarding economic exploitation by the parents of a member of Friends Landing. On the cult education website, there are five articles that are written by people who have been who have seen inside the group and have witnessed some of the strange goings on. The mother I sat the scene with at the beginning of the story says, "During my visit, my son asked if my husband and I would fund or loan him money for a spherical reality course, which White Wind was giving. The cost was $5,000 for 10 weekend seminars. I told him that we wouldn't. My son called me at home the next week and told me that White Wind had suggested that he ask his relatives for money to pay her for the course. I told him I was uncomfortable with this idea. Why couldn't he just wait and take the class when he was out of school? What was the urgency? My husband agreed with me and called our son. Our son suggested that he speak directly with White Wind. My husband called her, as suggested, and her response was an explosion of insults about my husband, my son, and me."
Mm.
Rick Ross was actually called to do an intervention with a man at Friends Landing, and he said it was as an intervention specialist, I subsequently reviewed material sent to me by the family, including literature from Friends Landing explaining the programs offered there. He spoke extensively by phone as I prepared to come to California for the intervention, which would take place at their home. We worked together with their son for 3 days, who was staying home for a family visit. He agreed to cooperate and spoke voluntarily with both his family and me. We discussed his involvement in some depth, viewed educational videos, and reviewed the group's literature together. However, he ultimately decided to return back to the group.
Mm. That's sad.
Yeah. His father later commented, "We arranged for a professional intervention, which were three of the most difficult days of my life. My son voluntarily cooperated, but obstinately sat through these sessions, nearly trance-like much of the time. There were only a few moments of meaningful recognition. As soon as the 3 days were over, he agreed, or as soon as the 3 days he agreed to dialogue were over, although he would think it, although he said he would think it out, he returned promptly to the friend's landing compound, phoned us, and said that he would continue with the group." Another man who lost his son to the group mailed out a flyer in 2006 to the community to warn other people in the community about the group.
Oh.
He alleges acts of manipulation and brainwashing. He also compared White Wind to Reverend Jim Jones. He also exposes her many aliases and the, says that Friends Landing is bankrupt and that she owes more than $1 million back taxes and debt to attorneys. Oh, I'm sorry. 1 million buckaroos is what I wrote. 1 million buckaroos in debt to attorneys, accountants, and close friends and relatives.
That's a lot of buckaroos.
I know.
Man.
Oh, man. Okay. So, although Friends Landing was a for-profit business, it seems that they could not keep a hold of any of their money dollars.
Yeah.
Not only was Friends Landing facing bankruptcy, but they were also, they also had a tax lien on the property. The property was the subject of a land use hearing. So the land wasn't zoned to host these dream camps. The original application was denied, citing a county regulation that prohibits temporary use permits for activities on farmland if permanent structures valued at more than $1,000 were involved. So I was unable to find if the 1999 dream camp actually took place or not, but there was a bunch of hubbub about it.
Yeah.
One father wrote a letter to his son. "While we can sit here and chit-chat about how people get wrapped up in groups that look just like regular groups and turn out culty fast, we don't want to forget about the people that are left behind. It's really, really heartbreaking, and I won't promise that I won't cry."
Okay.
It's just so sad. So it's this father is writing a letter to his son who's in the camp. Oh, God.
Taylor, come on.
I'm sorry. Okay. "I imagine as you read this, it's probably getting you even angrier and alienating from us. I can't help you. I can't help how you feel. Only you can do that. But I cannot do anything but speak the truth as I see it. You are part of my family until you became involved with White Wind. Now you are estranged from us, all of us. We want you to come home, son. We want to share our love with you. All of us do. We don't want to control your life. We want to share our lives with you and yours with us. We want to laugh with you, cry with you, and argue with you and debate with you. We want you to be in our lives. You are not right now. And the only logical explanation for that is Friends Landing. I may have said some things and done things wrong to bring you back. And maybe I'm continuing to do that now, but I just can't sit here and hope you'll return someday. I can't just say the things I think you want to hear. I have too much respect for your intelligence to do that. The important thing for you to know is that everything I'm doing is for the purpose of having you be a part of our family again, a meaningful part, a participating part, a loving part, and I will continue to be active in doing whatever I can to make this happen. When you left to go to college in 1995, you made me an Indian-style snake and said that the snake sheds its skin to adapt to its environment and that you saw that in me. That I adapt to new surroundings and take action to affect positive change in those surroundings. Well, you're right. These are new and not so good surroundings, and I am and will continue to take whatever steps possible to help you rejoin us. Please come home. You are missed dearly by all of us. We know your family is important to you, so please call us, and we can again try to be together and sort things out. With all my love, your father." I know. It's so sad. Like, even though there, like, we've had such horrible cults, like, we've covered some really gruesome bad things.
Yes.
To hear it.
Oh. Like, a family wanting...
From your dad.
Oh, God.
Wanting you to come home. Like, it gets me.
I can't.
In my heart.
Mm.
So, now, White Wind has moved on from Friends Landing. I'm not sure what the final straw was, but today she has changed her name once again and goes by Anahata Graceland, but calls herself Wendy.
Okay. Sure.
A nickname for a nickname for a pseudonym for a fake name. She breeds bulldogs and sells them online from anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000.
Jesus, God.
And if you want to stalk the website, it's up and available for you. It is royalfrenchel.com.
Okay.
And she does not say anything anywhere on the website about Friends Landing or her past at all, period. She basically says, I've been doing this for 50 years.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So that is White Wind, Swan, and Friends Landing.
I hate it.
It's just so
weird.
So weird. Such a weird, like, for-profit, for, like, weird gain. I just don't know what the point is.
Yeah, I don't know what the point is either.
But
where's the like, pinnacle?
I think it's just for money. I really think it's just for money. And it's so much mumbo-jumbo babble that people who want to believe that they have such a high intellect are like, I totally get what she's saying. Don't you get what she's saying? And if you don't get what she's saying, are you stupid?
Oh, God.
You know, but she's just mumbo-jumboing.
She's just loving light everybody to death.
Yeah. So.
Ew.
Yeah, I mean.
Is Swan, like the name Swan, a cult red flag?
I'm wondering if it might be.
Because we had Teal Swan.
Yeah. White She's Swan. Awful too.
Yeah.
Colorful Swan. Teal Swan, White Swan.
Black Swan.
Black Swan.
Big red flag.
Extra hard big red flags. It's going to be a firm negative.
Firm no on that. So look out for swans.
Yeah. Swans everywhere.
Holy shit.
So that's my cult for today.
Gross.
Yeah.
Gross, Tay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks a bunch. What's your bright and shiny?
Oh, gosh. You go first.
Mine's going to be stupid. Mine is a gentleman named Francis Bourgeois. He is a TikToker, and I don't know if anybody has seen him, but he is just a jolly little lad who goes train spotting.
Oh my gosh.
And he wears like a GoPro on his noggin. So you get like the funniest angle when a train goes by. And he is so filled with the purest, most wholesome joy.
Aww.
And like a lot of the places he goes, like the train drivers like know him. So they like honk the horn at him. And it's always like a really big deal if they honk. But he has garnered so many followers on TikTok that he has quit his job.
Oh, shit.
To go train spotting.
That's amazing. I love when people can quit their job for their like little passion that they made a video about once.
That's yes. And I commented that. I was like, I'm so happy for you, Francis.
Oh, my God. I love it.
He's so he is my bright and shiny. Like I can be having a really bad day and then I just see how his face lights up when he sees a train and it just.
That's adorable.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy.
I love that. My bright and shiny is... Let me think about it. No, you're good.
Something small. Oh,
I don't have any big plans next weekend.
Nice.
So I can just like do my normal shit.
Yeah.
And like chill out.
Oh, I love that.
Next weekend. I'm super excited.
I love that for you.
It's been like a lot of weekends of a lot of things happening.
Consecutively.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this coming weekend, I am going to be able to like clean my house probably, which is going to be very exciting.
You're going to go trick or treat or like not go trick or treating, but like pass out.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Well.
I'm not trying to bleep that out. Not trying to spoil the timeline. Next weekend is Halloween here.
Yeah.
In the real world, God knows when this episode will see the light of day.
God only knows.
God only knows.
Yeah. So that's it. If you like our show and you want to rate us, you can. We would love it so much.
It makes our heart so happy. If you hated it, you can also rate us, but make it funny.
Right. Put some effort in.
Yeah.
Don't just leave a 2-star review. You have to tell us something.
Make it
constructive.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm all about constructive criticism. If you want to leave us a 2-star review, like, I get it. I get it. But tell us, like, a way to improve.
How can we earn your 5 stars today?
What What can I do to have you give us 5 stars today?
Oh. Help me help you.
If you have like any creepy crawly stories, if you've ever been in a cult, email us littlebitgrim@gmail.com. You can go to our website, littlebitgrim.com, and submit it there if that's easier.
Yeah. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a Pinterest.
TikTok.
We do have a TikTok.
We do have a TikTok. Follow us on TikTok. We haven't posted a video, but like maybe if we get a couple followers, we just like might. You know?
And if you're on TikTok, you can, and you come across anything creepy and weird or like a true crime TikTok, you can tag us. That's super helpful.
Yes. Then we
You can find a story you want us to cover? Tag us.
Let us know. Listen, our creative juices are always
firing on all cylinders,
No, they're not. Sometimes it's more of a creative trickle.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So tag us and stuff you want us to cover and be kind to yourself.
And to others.
Goodbye.